Thank you. I forgot which button he had told me to push to move it over, but I remembered. Hello, my name is Andrew Ahrensing. I'm from the America's Cloud Services Group back in the U.S. I'm based out of Chicago. And for the past 5 to 7 years, I've been involved with our OCS and Link deployments, both sizing, planning, helping customers adopt, going through pilots, proof of concepts, and essentially being the early wave, right? So doing that initial sort of planning and estimating and then partial deployments. My background prior to that was around mail and messaging. I'd been asked to pick up sort of the voice track as we started moving into voice a few years prior, and so spent the last several years helping customers transition through that. The sessions here are only an hour. We usually go about an hour 15 for the other events. And so what I've done to cut the 15 minutes out is cut a lot of the agenda and sort of overview and history and background. So if you're looking for some of that, we'd welcome you to watch, for example, the U.S. Tech Ed ones. You can see some more background and whatnot. What we're going to try to do in the next hour is cover the changes in Link 2013 around enterprise voice. So the first half of the session will be around what's new in 2013 versus prior versions of Link. And the second half is, how do you take Link 2013 and these voice improvements and changes that we've identified or have enhanced in the product, and then use that in your environment in a way that coexists or interoperates with your existing telephony infrastructure. And so we'll spend some time talking about why or how you can use Link as that voice solution for your users and what options you have to sort of make this interoperability work from a voice perspective. We find that in the U.S. to be one of the most common sort of entry to Link scenarios. People want to know, like, how can I set up or stand up an instance of Link, right? But I still have this existing telephony gear. I want to have some level of interop while I justify the full Link project to do a larger portion of pure Link users, for example, and usually a little bit of what we'll call test the waters, right? So you've heard us speaking now for several years about the capabilities of Link. As you go to deploy it, you'd like to test that out yourself, but not quite leave the existing pool that you're in today. How many people here are running, have a Link phone number that is pure Link and is not in any way integrated with another platform or device? So I see a few hands raising up. How many of you have Link capabilities, but maybe including enterprise voice, but linked back to you have a single DID, for example, on a PBX, but it also rings your Link extension, for example, or your Link number as well? I see a couple more hands in the back. How many people are not using Link today? Any hands in the up? Oh, a handful. All right. So we have... as we go through, right, and have covered the sessions, what I found is about 5 to 7 years ago, we'd have these conversations. That's let's say 2009, 2010, so 4 years ago. A lot of customers were coming out talking about Link from the pre-sale side. They wanted to know capabilities and what it could do from a deployment perspective. How would I set it up in my organization? Or more of a compete factor, right? So like, what did Link do compared to what I have today? And what we found in the last year or two is it's a lot more of, we have some Link licenses, we have a Link deployment, and we're looking at expanding that into the conferencing and voice capabilities. So hopefully at the end of the session, you'll have an awareness of what's changed from the Link 2013 perspective around voice and why we feel it's a suitable voice replacement or a voice solution for your end users, and how to deploy Link in that solution for some level of integration which you may have running today in your environment. So as I said, the first half hour, we'll talk primarily about the voice enhancements in Link 2013. In here, we've had a lot of work going into providing a higher level of voice availability. What we've found is that another analogy we use is that the existing telecom industry has had about 100 years to optimize voice routing, voice calls, dialing patterns, infrastructure, et cetera, that can be deployed. Voice over IP has had about 15, right, maybe 20 years or so that organizations have been adopting and deploying voice over IP. And so there's been a catch-up period as the voice over IP vendors add and enhance the capabilities to sort of reflect what's capable in that existing environment where you have the TDM infrastructure and this long legacy of adapting to user and or business needs. So one of the areas that we... improved in Link 2013 is specifically around the routing aspects. It turns out that as you deploy larger environments and you have satellite or branch offices and multiple data centers, for example, there's things such as call routing and interoperability with other systems that are important and are required to ensure that the calls will flow through, not just flow through, but right, have the appropriate policies defined, and if there's certain trunks or lines that are down, that we can route the call by other aspects so that from an end user perspective, when they dial the number, it works. The method we find to provide that right is to add as much resilience as possible in those paths for the outbound or inbound calling action to take place, as well as along all those paths, ensure that we have a lot of checkpoints, right? So reaching out and tickling or validating that the next hop or the next path that I'm going to choose for that option is actually available, and if not, reflecting that in the internal topology so we can make wise decisions on how to route that call. Reporting is another area where we require a lot of investment around voice, right? Reporting is required in organizations often for anything from billing or chargeback purposes. When we talk about voice over IP, reporting also encompasses or includes the concept of how we provide data or troubleshooting post-call, right? And so from a Link perspective, we have this role called the, in Link 2010, we called it the monitoring server. In 2013, it's just co-located as a service on our front end, so you don't have to deploy a separate server for it. But it captures these call detail records, and we'll show you some of the reporting changes around that. From a call perspective today, our CDR, or our call detail records, are, we would say, some of the most robust in the industry. You will get endpoint information such as what is a laptop or desktop and which USB device was the audio coming through, was it wired, was it not wired, what was the MOF scores, drop packets, right? An amazing wealth of information, around 10 to 15K actually, per incident or individual call, and reflected in a very clear, easy-to-use SQL reporting services environment with a lot of pre-canned reports. So you can see trends of as detailed as we see a lot of yellow or red calls coming from this specific location or this specific Wi-Fi hotspot, right? And so that helps you troubleshoot underlying network conditions to help enhance what you have in your environment around a, around a call quality perspective. So for 2013, some of the enhancements here are around more on the voice side around some call details. We'll kind of go into some more detail around that. We also introduced this concept a couple of versions ago called response groups. Response groups are our version of doing call routing in an organization to provide a mini call center, right? So this is something that allows you to have a phone tree that says press one, you know, reach this group, press two, press three, and have multiple tiers, have different hours of operations and different greetings associated with that. And we had always targeted that as sort of the small work group level. We do have some other functionality called team call that individual users can set up if they have their permissions to. So like for the small 3 to 5 person help desk, and we'll talk a little bit about those aspects. But response groups we saw is kind of the next level. It doesn't have capabilities such as manager barge-in, right, or some of the more advanced call center scenarios. And we kind of always have said for Link, we, you know, typically you'll use a call center solution for your heavy call center workflows and the requirements around that. What we found over the past several years, however, is because response groups are included and you're licensed for it, and it encompasses, let's say, 60 to 80% of what you might need for a basic call center environment, that organizations actually started to deploy these quite heavily. And so it went from something that we thought would be a niche use case scenario to one that we looked and saw some room for enhancement. And so we'll talk about some of the improvements specifically around management and operations of response groups that you can deploy in an organization to achieve these benefits, right, without having to go that next level and procure some third-party hardware and software from the call center functionality. Voice also has a lot of concepts around policies and authorization, right? So who can dial what numbers and what happens, for example, when I roam to different locations, and how do I route calls when I'm dialing domestically, nationally, or internationally, for example. We've added some changes around that to provide you the flexibility to maintain sort of that same rules or dialing patterns that you might have inside of your environment today. And I mentioned also, right, this concept of reliability. Not only are we keeping track inside of Link of what components we're aware of, so all of the Link server roles, trunks, et cetera, services that are running, but also Link has to talk to something else, right? We know that not everyone in the world is running Link, and probably even in your organization, not everyone is running Link as their solution. So at some point, we have to hand off the call to another device, whether that be a software voice over IP PBX or a hardware gateway or something along those lines. And so we've added some reliability metrics or capabilities to detect availability, performance, and or capacity, right, on those platforms as well, so we can feed that back into our master call routing infrastructure inside of Link, always to help ensure that we're making that optimum decisions for call paths and for call routing. One of the first ones, almost a simple feedback, you might say, is this concept of delegate call routing. So previously, if I was the delegate for another person, let's say Lohit here was my manager, and I had my call set to simul-ring Link endpoint set to simul-ring my cell phone or to forward calls to my cell phone, and a call came into Lohit, he doesn't answer, it comes to my Link device. It didn't respect those call forwarding rules. And part of the rationale behind that was that if I was, for example, simul-ringing my cell phone and my cell phone was powered off or out of service or for some reason out of coverage and the voicemail on my cell phone picked up, that call to Lohit would hit the delegate's voicemail platform on my personal or my work cell phone, right? Probably not the call path that you might have expected calling Lohit. You were not expecting to get Andrew's personal voicemail. However, what we've added to enable this is what we call a too-soon timer. So if I'm the delegate and one of my simul-ring or endpoints picks up very rapidly, we assume that that's the call that was forked to an endpoint that most likely was out of service or out of coverage, and we won't make that the final destination of the call, right? We'll continue to ring the other endpoints to see if I'm available. If I pick up on one of those, I will. Otherwise, we'll divert the call properly back to Lohit's voicemail rather than having going to mine or the assistant's voicemail in that manner. So relatively simple from a code, right, or topology perspective, but again, trying to provide that consistent end-user experience and what we'd expect in that sort of delegate relationship. And this way we can maintain that even if you have many-to-many in terms of admin-delegate relationship. It's very common in organizations now to see sort of a shared pool or a person who's a delegate for many managers, for example, right? And so we want to maintain that approach regardless of the traditional or previous sort of one-to-one type relationship. We also have, in Link 2013 now, finally, the concept of session management, right? So session management really allows us to have Link be between, for example, the PSTN and an internal PBX or other voice infrastructure. In Link 2010 and prior, we were the endpoint, right? We were not necessarily the intersection of call flow in the environment. And so with adding call routing capabilities, we can now have that inbound trunks pointing to Link. We can do digit manipulation and other aspects as required, as we'll see, and then pass off calls destined for Link users to a user on Link, and calls destined for other system or other platform users to that other platform itself. And so adding the session management capabilities allowed that sort of call flow or call flow through, which ensures that we have more choices when we go to determine where to place the Link topology in the environment, right? Before it was, as we said, always an endpoint there. Now it can be placed farther upstream, and you can leverage a lot of the native and or simpler capacities for modifying things like dial plans and trunk rules, et cetera, in the environment from a Link side versus on other platforms. This is all completely integrated with the existing Link routing you're already aware of. So if you're familiar designing or operating a Link environment from a call flow perspective, it's very simple to add Link upstream, add the additional trunks to other platforms. All of our policies and other information will continue to apply. So if you're using things like call access control, right, or other sort of rerouting capabilities or authorizations, those continue to apply regardless of where the endpoint of that call eventually is, whether it's a Link endpoint or a third-party endpoint. So if we take a look, right, at a sample example of what we talk about for session management, here we've got our front-end server, right? We have some PBX users in one part of our organization. That PBX has a trunk established with Link. That Link environment understands that when PBX user A is calling PBX user B, that I'm going to just route that traffic directly between those two PBX users in the environment. Signaling, of course, is going to pass through our front-end pool, where those front-end servers are for registration. However, media flow, in this case, we will define, right? So we could have it, depending on whether or not we have media bypass enabled or not, we can have that media flow directly, or we can have that media cross or transfer through the Link environment from the mediation server role. When we talk about IPP, same concept, right? When we talk about a PSTN, so here we're showing Link being upstream from an existing PBX in the environment, so we can deploy a session border controller, right, or some sort of gateway to talk to our PSTN vendor. At that point, call flow signaling will flow through the Link environment. However, we can do media bypass to send that media directly back to the IP PBX in the infrastructure. So we're handling the rules and the authorizations, right, and the policies associated with that, but we are not necessarily handling the media. We would have that media bypass directly to the endpoints as possible in the org, right? So if that IP PBX is in the same central office, right, or location as our Link environment, we'll have the media flow directly there. If we do have to have the media cross a WAN, we typically will recommend that it crosses the mediation server so that we have a better codec for that WAN connection in the environment. Another change that we've been making iteratively over the previous versions of Link is the concept of what we call flexible trunking. When we first released OCS 2007 R2, our relationship between a mediation server and the next hop, such as a gateway, for example, was a one-to-one pairing. And so if a gateway went down, right, the mediation server, any calls destined to that mediation server would also not flow out, as it didn't have a way to talk to another gateway inside of the organization. We'd have to handle that one level back, that mediation server would report back to the pool that its path outbound is down, and we'd send all calls out through the second mediation server to its associated gateway. Relatively limited in terms of your deployment choice, that also caused some scalability issues. With 2010, we allowed a single mediation server to have multiple gateways associated with it, or multiple paths or trunks outbound. That ensures that if one of those gateway devices, right, or hardware peers is unavailable, we can route the calls to a different one. We can have different policies and weightings on those to prioritize calls to one or the other as the outbound calls flow through. With 2013, it's M to N, right? So we can have any number of mediation servers handling any number of gateways inside of the organization. This gives us a lot more flexibility in our design. We have significantly more options now around call routing and call optimization. And it allows us to do things such as co-locate, the mediation server service on our front-end server so we don't have to deploy dedicated mediation servers. So if I have a single front-end pool and I have three or four mediation servers in that pool, I can have any relationship between that pool and the associated outbound gateways, therefore reducing the overall footprint in the server footprint in the organization, but maintaining the same level of discretion over call flow and call paths flowing outbound. The concept here, right, is kind of redefining the concept of a trunk. This concept, or the M-to-end concept, essentially, a Link mediation server, right, the trunk itself is a combination of the mediation server, FQDN, the SIP listening port, the SIP peer, right, so that hardware or gateway device on the other side, and the listening port out there. So we'll define the trunk along those relationships. At that point, then, we can assign routes to include one or more of those trunks for the outbound calling path. And so as we have gateway devices that might have encrypted or non-encrypted capabilities, right, we can define the appropriate outbound trunks of that mediation server to those specific gateways. In Link 2010, this was just a list of gateways. We didn't have that sub-optimization of being able to define the external access ports associated with it. We're getting to a greater level of detail now defining the specific trunks, which allow us some additional options, right? So the gateway device might have some policies saying on this port, these called numbers are allowed, for example, on this other port, a different set of called numbers. And now with Link, I have the ability to fork to either one of those and have those equivalent policies defined or associated in Link. Essentially, it gives us some additional options, right? We can do media bypass for PBX users in that same site. We have some more options then around the call routing aspects with this concept of flexible trunking. We've had the concept of digit manipulation for called numbers in Link going backwards, right? So when we had inbound call flow in Link, we were able to modify digits coming in from that gateway device or from the PBX. With Link 2013, we now add the concept of calling number translation. So now we're able to apply digit manipulation, both inbound and outbound. It's common in some scenarios to have some gateways right at a location expecting a number pattern coming in a specific number of digits or a specific dialing method. And so this allows us to set up trunk rules for trunks going to that gateway and ensure that when we're calling a specific number and that number is routed over this specific trunk to a specific gateway, we can have the appropriate digits configured so that we have a consistent call flow or consistent call experience. This is common in the interop space, typically, or so if you're not aware, in Link, we recommend that numbers be formatted using E.164. And so all users are represented with an E.164 number. And when we pass the number off to the PSTN or to the gateway, we typically would do that in the E.164 format. It's a worldwide one. Everyone understands it, right? However, what we found over the past several years is there's a lot of cases where in a coexistence environment, for example, or with some specific carriers or gateways, we needed to pass the number off with a different number pattern. And so this concept allows us to apply or to define that number pattern and therefore include that correct call formatting for the outbound number depending on which outbound gateway or which trunk that call flows through. So we have it as E.164 inside of Link as we normalize it. And then when we make our routing decisions, we can make additional digit manipulations based on that specific route itself. So looking at this, right, how this would work in practice is we have our logical diagram, a front-end server and a mediation server for practical or for simplicity purposes. We've broke those into two separate server roles. Just remember that those are not necessarily separate, right? We can have the mediation server co-located on the front-end server itself. That's the typical deployment pattern in an organization. But as we point out, the called number and the calling number translation now both can happen, and that happens on the route as the mediation server hands the call off to that gateway or PBX-type device. Same process for calling numbers, right? In this case, we can see the user's calling a number, translation rule applied. We'll pass that off to the external PBX or the outside world and have that digit manipulation performed so the call flows as expected. The other one of the other changes is a concept around location-based routing, right? So in this case, we want to also maybe control the method or manner in which conference calls are dialed for dial-in audio conferencing inside of the organization. There's some countries and or regulatory environments specifically that have rules around bypassing or routing calls internally over your network versus sending them to the PSTN itself. And so whether I'm placing an international call or placing a toll call in that organization, that is supposed to be routed out through that regulatory environment's localized entity and not pass perhaps over my WAN connection back to a central office where I might incur less or reduced toll charges. And so the concept of location-based routing says if a user is roaming in these jurisdictions, right, I'm allowed to do sort of an optimized call routing path where I will route out to the cheapest gateway essentially to place that call, typically for international purposes. But if I'm roaming inside of one of these areas of regulation, right, where I do have to place outbound calls locally and leverage that country's PSTN, for example, and incur those toll charges, that will continue to work, therefore respecting the toll requirements of that organization or entity. And so we allow that, right, regardless of where the user roams and or where the user is primarily housed by controlling it in the Link outbound routing topology area. So let's take a look, right? Here we have a Link user, one user at site A, one user at site B. We have a centralized location that has our Link topology or our Link pool environment. Link user 2 is authorized to call outbound locally from site B when he's at site B, right? And so therefore can leverage the local gateway for that. Link user 2, however, is not authorized to call outbound when he's in site A, or not authorized to leverage the gateway in site A when he's at site B, right? So in this case, when he's at site B, we're not allowed to have the call traverse our corporate WAN and go out that gateway. The call would exit the site B gateway, go through the PSTN, and reach an outbound or a PSTN user over in site A. Same concept, right? So let's say that user, oops, and it looks like the colors are changed here. User from site B has roamed over to site A. In that case, site A's user, of course, has always been authorized to call outbound. Site B's user now, again, not allowed to traverse the WAN to talk out the gateway in site B. So user cannot transverse that gateway or transverse the corporate network. in order to make the call out under the PSTN. They're authorized to use a local gateway, but we can't do that sort of bypass scenario to optimize routing. And again, this is not something that we see everywhere. There's only specific countries that don't allow this concept of having voice over IP calls transverse the data network and therefore go out the cheapest toll exit point. If this user, right, that has roamed from site B over to site A is there and a call comes inbound to the gateway, we actually will divert that call to UM rather than have the call transverse and go back to the user. So not only are we applying the policies for outbound calling from that specific user perspective, we also will apply that no crossing the WAN requirement for inbound calls as well, meaning that even though the user's up and online on the network, they're not physically at the location where they're allowed to receive the call, so therefore call is diverted to voicemail rather than flowing through. We mentioned the concept of response groups and team calls or group calls. One of the other common scenarios is you have an open kind of desk or work group type scenario established. You have a group of people, and there's a common number that when it comes in, rings, and anyone in that group can pick up their phone and answer the call. We call this concept a group call pickup in Link. So in essence, we have the ability to have a number defined for that entity or that group of users, right? We can configure that by a PowerShell, assign users to that group call park orbit using a resource kit tool, SCFA util. And at that point, users who are part of that group call park or group call pickup can then pick up the call from any Link phone edition or Link device that they're signed in on. They don't have to be in that location, right? That would still ring at their Link endpoint wherever they're traveling to. And they'd have full access to that group call pickup environment from inside of the environment. If a person is not in the group call park solution, they could still pick up the call by dialing the orbit number assigned to it. So if I happen to be there, I see the phone's ringing, I'm not part of the orbit, so it doesn't ring my extension, but I know that I want to pick up the call. I know that that group call pickup is 3456. I dial 3456. I have access to pick up the call itself. When we're talking about group call pickup, a lot of the end user call routing aspects do not apply. So things like private line, delegation, team call, simulring, response groups, right, personal contacts will not apply in that scenario. That group call pickup is just to ring those endpoints at the location, right, and have a user be able to pick that up either because they're part of it or because they had the ability to dial the orbit number. And again, it doesn't matter. They could be running Link on their laptop or desktop, on their mobile phone, right, or Link phone edition. They'll have access to that group call pickup from any one of those devices. Another change in 2013 is how we provide outbound calling information via the SIP signaling path to our outbound providers, whether that be an SBC or PSTN, right, or a PBX inside of the organization. We do have additional options, right, so we now pass additional information for calls that came in and are being forwarded out to help identify the true originator of that call. And so we leverage in the SIP language, there's a concept of P-asserted identity, referred by, and history info that help the next hop understand the true call originator. So if a call came in to my Link number, I've got SIMO-RING associated with that, right? That call is going to leave my Link environment and go out to the PSTN. That next hop appears like it's coming from me, but in reality, right, that call is coming from an outbound number or another PBX number inside of the organization. And so we want to pass that true intended or the true originating source caller as one of these additional fields, because in some cases there's a regulatory or billing or some other aspect that should either prevent or that has to be aware of on that next hop system of who the actual originating caller was. So this is relevant, you know, typically just in a billing environment that helps understand the incurred cost for that SIMO-RING or call forwarding or other aspect that has triggered this sort of call forking behavior. We do allow the concept of enable and disabling forwarding like this. So it's possible that call forwarding for some numbers would be allowed, call forwarding to some other numbers would not be allowed. We talked about the concept of response groups. So response groups are our sort of Link capable solution for providing more capabilities than a team call or group call. So now I have the concept of times of day, right, and agents and prioritization of which agent's going to take the call. Is it the next available, the longest idle time, right? Scenarios like that. But in previous versions of Link, administering and configuring response groups required some PowerShell access and or administrator functionality. So it wasn't something I could delegate out to the line of business or a moderately technical person there, right? Unless I was able to grant that person some command line access, essentially, in the Link environment. I could delegate it out where they only had permissions to that one, but your typical line of business user doesn't want to change the welcome greeting on a public holiday by going to PowerShell, right? They want to upload a WAV file in a website and makes it a little simpler for them. So with Link 2013, we've made that a lot easier. In the product itself, we define a role called the response group manager. You can assign this response group manager permissions to any of the response groups you have in the organization. They're only able to administer and see those specific response groups. They can now move agents back and forth between these as required. They can modify the prompts, right? They can modify the workflow associated with that of how many levels and which options users are selecting. They can modify the recordings, right, that are uploaded that play at the different prompts that the users hear. So with that, they now have the ability to do that, and they have the ability to do that via, there's a web config tool for response groups or the Link server control panel as required. So you can give them some basic web training and they understand, okay, here's my response group, here's my workflow associated with it, here's how I can make modifications to that without having to go back and open a ticket for the Link group. So as we saw this role of response groups grow and sort of become a lot more prevalent than we had anticipated, we realized we had to provide some more delegation capabilities here so that it wasn't the Link admin having to modify 20 greetings, right, on a public holiday, for example, for the different response groups in the organization. The next topic we'll talk about is this concept of restrictions. And so we've had, going back several versions now to the OCS timeframe, the concept of simul-ring and call forwarding. People really like the ability from their client to just choose simul-ring my cell phone, my home phone, or maybe another extension at work where I'll be traveling to, or forward the calls to this number for a period of time so it doesn't ring at my desk. And doing that via the GUI, right? I've had the capability to do simul-ring and call forwarding going back to the early 90s as I got my first desk phone, but it was in a manual 25 pages thick, and it required using star, pound, this, that, and some extensions, and I never did it, right? It wasn't easy or intuitive to do. In the Link client, I use call forwarding and simul-ring all the time. It's easy to enter a phone number, it's in the GUI, it's straightforward to use. The downside is that when we had call forwarding and simul-ring, that would leverage the voice policies that I was authorized for. So if I was authorized, for example, to dial international numbers, I can set simul-ring or call forwarding to an international number and then have that local number ring. It's useful for when I'm traveling. I typically set my simul-ring, for example, to a local SIM card in the country that I'm in. At that point, it's easy for coworkers to call me, right? They call my US number, call routes via Link. It comes out one of the gateways in that region, rings a local number. We have reduced toll charges, all as well. That scenario, however, can also be abused, right? You could have users setting their call forwarding or simul-ring somewhere else. Let's say their grandmother, right, and now their wife calls their work number and they can talk to grandma and the company picks up the charges for free. As a result, we've added in Link 2013 the ability to apply policies specifically around call forwarding and simul-ring. So a user may have authorization to dial international numbers, but they do not have access to set their simul-ring or call forwarding to the international number. And so that allows just another sort of a deeper level of policy or control on the call flow inside of the organization. We talked about this concept of improving reliability, and from a philosophical viewpoint, the Microsoft story on reliability is multiple components, right? There's the two approaches, we'll call them scale up and scale out. The scale up approach is what we used in the mainframe era. You had more CPUs, you added more capacity to this giant box, right? And there was a lot of availability built around this sort of single point of, or this single entity, which internally had multiple components. On our side, it's more of the let's spread out the load across multiple individual lower cost components. However, when we do that, we have a lot of things that can fail, right? Gateways fail, WAN connections fail, network connections fail, servers fail in the environment. And we have to have a way of picking up or notifying the link environment and the routing associated with that, that we did have a failure. So from a mediation server perspective, we have both inbound calls and outbound calls. Outbound calls, the next hop is going to be this gateway or session border controller or an IP PBX that's listening on a specific IP address and TCP port per trunk relationship we establish. We send out these option polls, right? So we want to know, is that trunk available? So every minute we're sending a little ping, hey, are you still there on that IP address and that TCP port? We are, okay. I'll report back to my master routing environment that this trunk is still active and established, right? I'm ready to take a call and route it via this specific trunk method. It's possible, as we saw a couple of slides back, that the mediation server has a trunk to multiple different gateways, right? So I might have two or three gateways associated with that mediation server, service, or pool. So in this case, I might have some trunks alive and some trunks down. With that, I'm going to send back a 504 to the front end saying, hey, I'm partially available here, right? But some of the trunks are going to be down. I'll alert you on which ones those are. If the options fails for all the trunks I'm associated with, I'm going to send back a 503. That ensures that no outbound calls will traverse me. It doesn't make any sense for the routing component, right, to select a mediation server that has no next hops available on that. So we're checking constantly via this polling once a minute. We also would detect, for example, the same concept applies in a call. So previously, if we had a call fail, we'd mark that trunk as down, right? In this case, we're now saying, prior than wait for the call failure, let's just pull periodically and report that status back in. Similar process for inbound. Inbound calls will come in from PBX, the SBC, gateway appliance, right? Next hop is the mediation server. Mediation server then has to pass that call off to somewhere else in the environment. Mediation servers have a next hop pool or pools, right? They're aware of all of the front end pools that we have available in the organization for that next hop. So we'll keep track. We have a next hop proxy and a backup next hop proxy. So we're looking at the pools in the organization. If one of those pools is unavailable, we'll route to the backup pool automatically. Similar concept, right? We do this concept of, sometimes you'll hear us just say a tickle or an options polling. We're just checking to see, first for outbound side, right? Are my gateways or SBCs available? And second, on the inbound side, next hop, are those pools available? If not, let me route to the backup one so I don't have to make that decision at the call time. So previously, we'd find out during a call. We then would try to reroute it. But now you're seeing additional rings, right, or a delay, for example, on that call being established. similar concepts here around outbound routing. When we have more than one trunk defined, we had some choices in previous versions of Link as to when we would use different trunks in the organization. So in this case, right, if we don't get this 180X or the call is okay essentially received back, we've got 10 seconds as a timer that starts counting down to say, if not, let's mark that trunk as down. So during a call, right, if we make that attempt to place the call and that after 10 seconds we don't hear a reply back, we're going to start deferring other calls to another trunk in the organization. Essentially, at this point, we're saying that the tickle succeeded. We then went to place the call, but for some reason, that next hop is not responding, right? We have some period of time before we want to report back that now we are experiencing a problem. We don't know if it's just a temporary problem, as in it's busy and it's going to get back to us in 8 seconds instead of the normal second or two, or if this is a permanent problem. So we want to report that transient type issue back to the call routing and the front end pool so that that routing logic again can be updated. Once that pool comes back up, right, so if we had a mediation server pool marked down because of the trunks that were outbound were down, we do continue sending options polls out to it because at some point, service was restored, right? We don't want administrator action to be required saying, I fixed the problem for the equipment that was down. Now let me go take care of the equipment that was up and tell it that the down equipment's back up. So even when our next hop is down, we will continue to try to send these options polls. When the equipment or functionality is restored, calls will just begin flowing again. We don't have to go in and mark for the surviving equipment that the failed equipment is no longer there. Okay, so that was the first just about 30 minutes or so covering the voice changes or voice improvements. These are on top of all of the existing voice ones. If you're looking for more of a voice overview, as we said, right, the sessions from last year's Tech Ed are all available online. You're welcome to take a look through that and learn just sort of an overview of Link itself. The next 20 to 30 minutes, we'll talk more about our voice interoperability capabilities. We're finding this to be one of the most common requests in organizations, as I kind of stated earlier, right, of I have some equipment today, right? It's in most of your cases, it's not Link that you're running as your primary voice platform for end users. You might be running Link for instant messaging or for conferencing, but you've got an existing environment. And the question that organizations keep posing to us is, how do we take Link and have it interoperate or integrate, is the phrase we always hear, with what I own, and so therefore achieve some sort of benefits and or capabilities without having to completely replatform and move numbers you over. Our preference, right, is that if you have the capability and you stand up Link, it's much simpler from an organization support perspective to just port the phone number. And if you ask Andrew, right, as someone talking to your organization, typically the best integration story is some numbers ring on the PBX, some numbers ring on Link, and so it's an either-or type of relationship. I'm either a full Link user or I'm a full PBX user. Sometimes we make the joke, right? We call it layer 8, right? So in some cases, the technical decision is not the one that drives the overall decision in the organization. And so you'll have these requirements to get some level of interoperability between what I own and the Link environment that I have. And as we went over the past few years, we've had a lot of back and forth and kind of learnings of what's possible and what's not possible. And we kind of distilled down what are some of the general common requirements for this. I want to have my desk phone ring, but I also want Link to ring. I want some Link features to work, and I want the desk phone features to work. What are the options around that? So the common ones, right, are from the Link side, if you're going to be placing or receiving telephone calls, that's called Enterprise Voice. It requires the voice CAL inside of Link. So if you're doing peer-to-peer or computer audio, that's not a voice CAL, right? You can do that with the basic or the standard CAL inside of Link. But once I start having a phone number ring in Link or having that Link user call outbound, I'm up to the voice CAL. So at that point, we have users enabled for what we call Enterprise Voice. And as another common requirement, right, people like their phone number as well as they like their email address. They're typically not happy when that changes. So if I'm getting some Link functionality, I expect my Link device to ring. I don't want two phone numbers at my desk, right? One phone number in Link and one phone number at my desk. That makes a kind of a poor end user experience. Another common one, right, is we've invested in our PBX platform. We're not ready to give that up yet. So I want to retain that. So for the next 2 years or 4 years or some period I've got on my support contract, I want the desk phone sitting there on the side. I'm not fully comfortable going all in on Link. I want it to ring at both places, but I want to retain that handset style experience until I have that comfort level right around the Link platform itself. So if I'm having two phones, right, a desk phone and a Link phone, I want a single DID. So that means I have one number coming inbound, and both of those endpoints should ring. If I call outbound, one of the ways that we can achieve, for example, both sides ring, right, is to give the user we'll call it a fake extension or a fake number in Link, and it's actually a number, right? But I don't want that Link number exposed when I dial outbound. So when I dial outbound, I should be exposing my existing DID number, right? So that's the other. So inbound calls should ring both. Outbound calls, I should be able to call from either platform and make that number flow through. We would like to retain Link for conferencing, and so we want the dial-in pin and the conferencing experience to be leveraged. If you're not used to Link conferences, when I initiate a conference, there's a dial-in number, right, and or a hyperlink if I'm using a computer. But if I'm on a phone, there's a dial-in number and there's a conference ID or a pin. And so each user has a conference pin associated with them. There's a website they can go to change that. And I want to preserve that website functionality and the ability of users to change their dial-in conference PIN, for example, and leverage their dial-in conference PIN when they're joining conferences from a phone device. If I do a click-to-call, right, that should work. I should be able to select the options inside of the Link contact card to make that call occur. In that case, obviously, the call will be leaving Link, right, and potentially, optionally, right, ring that IP PBX phone set that ensures I can make the outbound call and possibly leverage the phone itself of it. In some cases, organizations want that IP phone or their desk phone to show presence, so they're able to show the capability of presence inside a Link, and always retaining the option for what we call pure Link, right? So pure Link is the number is 100, the DID is terminated on Link. There is no DID for that number on the desk phones. This is a pure Link user. So from a pure Link perspective, the bottom requirement is easiest to create. You set up a SIP trunk between your Link pool and your existing environment. You assign some numbers to the Link side. You configure your gateway or your PBX to route numbers or to route those calls right over that trunk directly to Link. But let's take a look at what some of our options for to achieve some of these first few items. So the first one is Link users and enterprise voice. In Link, when you define a user, it's a little different than your traditional TDM PBX environment. In the PBX environment, there's not really the concept of a user, there's a concept of a line, right, or a number. And those are the ports or lines that are associated with users, but a user is not the primary information repository or object that I'm configuring. In Link, the primary object I'm configuring is an Active Directory user object. I can enable that user for Link, and then I choose which capabilities they have. Is it just instant messaging? Is it conferencing? Or is it enterprise voice? When I check the box for enterprise voice, I have this option called a line URI. That's the user's number inside of the Link environment. And so whenever I check that box and put a phone number there, I have a decision point, right? Either that phone number is authoritative in Link, and therefore the user can dial in and dial out. When we dial out, that's what would be exposed in the caller ID field, right? When a call is routed inbound, we expect that call to flow to Link, either directly from the PSTN or through the PBX over to the Link side. There's a discussion point here around what you're going to put in that field. If you're pure Link, that's the DID. If you're doing some sort of SIMO-ring, this is something else, right? So in this case, we'll kind of talk as we go through some of the other ones about what you put in there. Typically, it's an extension or possibly the Exchange Auto Attendant, for example. That'll help preserve the conferencing aspects, but it's not going to make that number authoritative from a dial-out perspective. We can also leave it blank. We don't have to assign a number there. Some of the more recent third-party PBXs allow something called a SIP URI style dialing, right? So it can fork the call to Link via the user's SIP address, not by the phone number, and so therefore I don't need to assign a phone number in Link, but I'll still have an inbound call hit the PBX and ring my Link endpoint. And so you have a choice of either a fake number, right, or blank when you're talking about these types of PBX coexistence scenarios. Enterprise voice, we want those users to keep their existing TDM or their IP phone, right, as well as the voicemail associated with that. That gets a little bit more challenging. When we have a Link voice interrupt scenario, we have two options. Either we can pass calls back and forth to Link, and those could be diverted to a SIP URI, right, to a fake number in Link or to an actual phone number in Link, or we can have a user enabled for what we call RCC, or remote call control. RCC enables Link to control the desk phone, but the Link endpoint itself doesn't ring. So when I do a click to call, or I do any activity inside of Link that leverages voice, Link is sending commands to the PBX to operate my desk phone. But RCC prevents anything ringing inside of Link. So if I want my IP phone and my voicemail to work as is, and I just want Link to control it. We talk about RCC. We have some challenges there, right? If you're roaming or you're remote, you're not going to see the light on your phone. If I'm using the existing voicemail platform, right, I'm not going to get the concept of voicemail inside of Link. I wouldn't get the notification in my Outlook mailbox, for example. The other one is that the present state isn't necessarily reflected inside of Link, right? It's going to depend on your PBX and phone type as to whether or not we can reflect on-hook, off-hook static with RCC coming back in the Link side. And from a Microsoft side, right, we're seeing less functionality. You're using Link for instant messaging and conferencing. You still have 100% of your voice traffic flowing over on the PBX side. This is really kind of the most common scenario, right? So let's keep that IP phone or the TDM phone there, but let's simul-ring Link somehow. This allows us to get close to that initial goal, right? So here we have the concept of forking the call on the PBX side and sending one of those forks over to the Link side. How we do that is going to depend on what capabilities we have on the PBX platform. Some can only fork calls to a phone number. That means we're assigning a virtual or kind of a ghost number inside of Link, right? It's not something we'll expose when the user dials outbound. I'll explain a little bit about that farther. But it does allow that PBX to fork any inbound calls to both Link and the desk phone. So if the user is roaming, they can answer the call in Link. If they're at their desk, they can answer the call on their Link headset, or they can pick up the desk phone. It's the same inbound calls, right? I have a single number from an outside perspective, and it rings both endpoints from an end user perspective. It is more complex, right? So at this point, we essentially have two voice platforms side by side. We've got essentially two dial plans in this type of scenario. We will have to do some administrative work to figure out what numbers we're putting into Link if our PBX can only fork calls to other numbers or other digits. And so there's some overhead associated with the concept of simul-ring. From the Cisco side, they do have the option for doing simul-ring to a SIP URI. There's a couple blog articles that I've got some links to farther down in the deck that you're welcome to take a look through. This essentially says when a call comes into my call manager, right, I will fork the call not just to the phone endpoints associated with it, but I will fork the call to the user's SIP address, which will ring any of their Link endpoints that are online or active. And so at that case, we don't have the issue of the ghosted number inside of Link, right? We're just doing the parallel fork over a SIP endpoint itself. The next one, right, is let's assume I've set up the simul-ring. I want to make sure that, those digits are not exposed when I make that phone call outside from the Link side. So when I dial out from my desk phone, it's already configured to send out some outbound caller ID. When I call from the Link side, I want to make sure that fake extension or the fake number in Link is not exposed outside. At this point, like I said, there's some additional administrative effort. What we're doing is we're going to mask that number and do some digit manipulation on the gateway. We will send, for example, a steering code or some code in Link. We'll prefix that to the number. And on our gateway or PBX, any inbound calls that have that prefix, we know to go through a number manipulation and therefore send the user's actual extension out to the outside world. A common scenario in this one is we set the line URI for the user to the Exchange auto attendant, and then it prepend postpend the EXT and their extension. That extension is what they can use for changing their Link dial-in access, dial-in conference number PIN on that dial-in conferencing page. So by adding either a 4 or 5-digit number directly on there or using the Exchange auto attendant with that 4 or 5-digit extension, we retain the concept of them being able to use the dial-in conferencing web page to reset their PIN. They'll know what their Link extension essentially is. That's what they're using for dial-in audio conferencing, and that's separate from their PBX or their DID number that they have internally in the organization. When we're talking about interop from the Link side, as we said, we like E164. We're designed around the concept that all numbers, when we're making a routing decision, are first normalized to E.164. So whether the number is in Active Directory or a user in their Outlook contacts, right, or they type a number into Link, when we send that number from their client back to the front-end pool, that number is first normalized. We recommend normaling to E164 because it gives us the most flexibility. It's a guaranteed unique number inside of the organization. We have a simpler time essentially managing then the Link call routing and trunk rules and other aspects inside of the organization. However, if we do have these E164 numbers associated with end users, and one of them is that end user's DID, for example, when I place a call, for example, let's say I go to dial Lohi, I dial in from my desk phone, that DID for low heat is associated with the PBX, so it knows how to route that number directly to low heat. From a link perspective, I type in low heat's name or I find him in my contacts and I go to dial it. We normalize that to E164. And if I had set low heat's line URI to his E164 number, it will call just his link number. It's not going to route the call to the PBX and fork it, right, to ensure that his desktop phone is going to ring as well. In this case, we can use an option appended to his line URI called ms-skip-rnl. That skips the reverse number lookup in outbound routing and would route that call directly to the trunk associated with that DID rather than trying to ring internal link endpoints if he happens to be online. So this tells Link, when I dial a number, always route that call via normal routing rules. Never try to look inside for that phone number first. And so this allows me to have the one number on the DID. I dial it in Link. It's going to send over to the PBX, which is the parent or the anchor for that phone number, right? If I dial it on the PBX, it's already the parent and anchor and all is well. So adding the MSSkipRNL allows that outbound calling scenario to work, even though we've normalized to E164 in the environment and we've potentially had that number represented as a link endpoint somewhere else. So SkipRNL is our process for allowing the outbound calling portion of Link to work successfully. So with this, right, kind of what is our solution or summary of the options as we walk through? We talked about this concept of a code. On our trunk rules, when I dial that outbound number, right, it's going to show the originating or the calling number as my ghosted link extension. I prefix this distance steering code, right, or a unique number that's in the organization. And when that hits the next top gateway, the gateway does number manipulation to replace it with my actual DID as the originating number. And then when the call goes outbound, right, it's my actual PBX phone number that's going to show up for that caller ID perspective. And so having that gateway do the digit manipulation, the way to tell it to do that is by putting a prefix in front of it that says, oh, that's Andrew. He's one of those unique SIMO-ring users, right? When I send his calls outbound, I actually don't want to show his link number. I want to show his PBX number, and that continues to work. We recommend on that one using pool-based dial plans. That ensures some of our logic and call routing is portable as those users move or roam throughout the organization. The line URI in this case is the E.164 DID, but without the plus sign. That ensures we can, that's another way essentially of getting us around the skip RNL or the other options there. And then finally, you could denormalize the caller ID on the egress if required, or you can use that like distance steering code, right, and have the gateway itself do the number manipulation. As we point out on the bottom, don't try to do some magic, right, around address book normalization, some faked IDs or other aspects like that. The simplest scenario that we see is the one that we present here. Provide it there without the plus, use the distance steering code, and have the gateway perform that functionality. If we show this, right, how does this process work in terms of configuration at the client level? We have a user. Typically the user, if it's a pure link voice user, we would say the tell URI field would include plus 1604, 699, 1234, right, with the, and I forgot, semicolon. Got stuck on colon there for about my colon, semicolon, and their extension. The extension is what we use for them to authenticate to a conference when it's dial-in audio conferencing. It's typically the last, or you know, is often, not common though, part of their number pattern itself. Users in Link also have a SIP address. So in this case, we see the user's SIP address as jassha@microsoft.com, places an outbound call, right? So in this case, they call a number, inbound call. For that user, it's going to come in, first talks to your inbound gateway, right, or inbound device. That call is going to talk to your PBX. Your PBX knows that number is associated with it and will ring the PBX extension or the PBX endpoints. It also knows that that number is one of these SIMO ring users. So let's put the prefix or steering code on that. When that comes into Link 2013, same concept as for outbound, we see the steering code go, oh, I need to normalize that number to the number associated with it that takes off the steering code and takes off the plus. Once I do that, that number is now, I say, ah, that number exists in the Link organization. Let me also ring the Link endpoint associated with that user. So from an inbound calling perspective, The number has rang both their desk phone as well as the Link environment, and user sees both devices light up or both devices ring. They can take the call. Either one that answers is going to go back to the PBX, and at that point, the call will be answered from the endpoint they picked up. A simpler environment, right? The one that, from the Microsoft side, we recommend because we don't have the complexity of sort of digit manipulation and SLAMO ring and everything else is, number comes in, user in Link has the E164 properly formatted. It's homed on the Link end, on the Link system itself, right? So when the call hits your PBX, we go, that number is a Link user. I'll just route it directly to the trunk. We don't have the overhead of digit manipulation or worrying about caller ID or other aspects around that. So with that, right, that sort of identifies our options around trying to meet some of these requirements for deploying Link side by side with an existing PBX and what you can do around digit manipulation, SLAMO ring, and other aspects to try to give users this single number but multiple platform experience. It's more complex from an administrative perspective. It's not as clean as a single endpoint, right? You're either pure PBX or you're pure Link. However, it does meet the, as we say, the layer 8 goal, right, of trying to have some level of integration between the platforms that you have. So if you have questions, feel free to come up afterwards. I think we're pushing up on time right now as towards the end of the session. So with that, let's we have time for three questions because we have three gifts. Yes. The question is with E1, so if a Link, so the question is if a Link user has E164 number assigned?
And he has two devices, but he wants to call the other device.
Two devices in Link?
Yeah, or, the same.
So the question is a Link user has, and let's say I'm a pure Link user, right? I've got an E164 number associated with it, and I have two Link endpoints, my computer, and then I'm here, right? And I've got my phone somewhere else in the organization. The question is, can you call between both of those endpoints and Link? The answer is you cannot. From a Link perspective, it's at the user level, not at the device level. And so my user account is active on both sides, but I can't call myself, essentially. Is that the question, right? The question is then, does Link plan to adopt, basically does Link plan to have a solution that would address that scenario? My knowledge is that's not, we see the calling experience as a user-specific more than a device-specific, right? And so that even though I might be registered at more than one location, those are my endpoints. If I'm at one, I'm not at the other, right? So if somebody else is at the other location, they would sign in or I would call them using their side of it.
Because you're talking about signing a phone to a person
and your ID. Right. Yeah, so yep. So the it's coming down to like, laptop to laptop is less specific. Right? I think where you're going is I have a Link phone device. That's my extension at my desk. I'm roaming. I know someone's at my desk. I want to call them. The Link phone edition devices, our answer to that is the other user would sign in with their extension and PIN, and then I would see them light up. I'd be able to place the call to that device, but it's actually another user at the device because they've signed in. So it makes it simple for sign in, sign out, and that's how we address that in Link. For that one, you can be the lucky recipient of the giant crab, because that question does come up. You enjoy. questions, yes? Yes, the question is, I have two platforms set up. How do I integrate call emission control? The answer to that is you can't. At this point in time, you cannot. There's been discussions between vendors around that, but at this, there's nothing to announce on near-term or longer-term interoperability of CAC, essentially. So that brings up complexity when it comes up with two different solutions and you're crossing WAN and trying to prioritize who's going to get the actual bandwidth on the Link. You essentially are having either congestion or further restrictions on the links. Yes? Yes. Question is there a way to say, so when a Link user goes on a call, the presence icon changes to in a call. The question is there a way to have either for certain users or certain calls, right? Some logic that says, when I'm in a call, it goes to do not disturb, which would, instead of continuing to ring, right, as like a second line, when I'm on do not disturb, everything else goes to voicemail, or even IMs go to my email box, for example. We don't. My knowledge is we don't have anything on the radar for like calling inbound on that. What we did do in Link 2013 is when you're presenting. So if you use a second screen or use PowerPoint right in a presentation mode, we will set Link to do not disturb because we're assuming at that point you're in. Typically, when a person is presenting, that's a scenario for do not disturb. So we've looked at sort of what can we identify from a user perspective that they're doing on the machine that should trigger do not disturb. The one that came up after some analysis, right, was presenting. It's a common user scenario. I don't know of any others that have surfaced up or bubbled for automatic set to DND. But it wouldn't be difficult to have a... So Link also has a well-documented API, both client-side and server-side, and it wouldn't be difficult to have a Link plugin that detects either specific inbound calls, right, or specific user action on the desktop that would then trigger the present state update to do not disturb. So we don't have one natively, but we have the capability exists in Link for you to add that sort of option in. And I'll take the rest of the calls towards back of the room because I know I'm close. I think we're close on time, and Scott is up next, but I'll be towards the back if you have any other questions. Thank you very much.